Hi, hello. We have a jam-packed episode of the Dunker Spot coming your way. First, we look at the East play-in picture. The Charlotte Hornets are rolling. The Atlanta Hawks are on a win streak. We're trying to figure out what's going on with the Orlando Magic. The Milwaukee Bucks just got Giannis back. Are they going to make a play-in push? Miami, sorry. We are going to come back to you soon. Don't you worry. But we tap in with the East play-in picture. We hope you enjoy. Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of the Yahoo Sports Network. I am your host, Nikias Duncan. And joining me, as always, is my co-host, the always excellent Steve Jones Jr. Steve, how are you doing, sir?
Feeling good, feeling great. Happy to be here. Excited to be here. Thank you, Dunkers, for once again embracing your bounce. Ready to talk some hoops. Nice hoodie.
You and I had the privilege of doing an episode of The Warm Up on the NBA app / NBA TV with the great John Fanta to kick off the regular season. And in the early portions of that show, I said, you know, I don't know if it's going to be the best division in basketball, but I think the Southeast division is going to be the most interesting division in basketball. And I was very fine with being on an island with that take, but that's how I felt heading into the year. Now, this also comes with me thinking the Magic are going to be the 3 seed. They are not there. The Hawks being the 5 seed. They are not there. The Heat being in the play-in, we will get there. But as of recording, Steve, your 7 seeds, the Orlando Magic, your 8 seeds, the Miami Heat, your 9 seeds, the Atlanta Hawks, the 10 seed is the Charlotte Hornets, and then we also have the Washington Wizards that are out of the play-in picture. But we're getting Trae Young basketball on Thursday, apparently, if he doesn't get suspended after getting ejected while being on the bench. So even the Wizards have had some fun this year. I am so fascinated by this race. Like, I'm fascinated by the play-in picture in general because, like, all of these teams, when they play their best, it feels like they can beat pretty much anyone in the East on any given night. The consistency is more so the issue there. And I think looking at the current play-in picture, it kind of sets up some fascinating matchups if it holds. But I really want to dig in on these teams because it feels like all four are kind of in different places right now. And within that, Steve, I wanted to talk about the Charlotte Hornets to kick things off.
Well, before you get to the Hornets, let's lay it out there. The Eastern Conference is going to be an absolute back and forth competitive nature. If you look at those standings every single day, you see a whole bunch of teams that are jockeying for position, but they all play as if they can beat each other. And that extends to those play-in type teams. And so we're kind of settling in on, okay, Detroit's at the top. So one of you get the Detroit Pistons, and I don't think they're going to be afraid of them. Not to say the Pistons haven't earned respect, but I think if you're a team in the Eastern Conference, again, you're looking at each other like, we can beat you. One of you gets either Boston or New York, and the Boston portion gets interesting because, you know, obviously Jason Tatum could return, but they have a very consistent style of play on both ends of the floor. So how do they set up to put themselves in position to knock on the door on some of these teams in a playoff series? While also trying to figure out how to beat each other to get in. I think that's where it gets fun. But yes, it's time, Nikias, long overdue, go ahead and talk about the red-hot Charlotte Hornets.
The red-hot Charlotte Hornets, indeed. So to kind of lay out the full picture, as of recording, they're 30-31. They're 10th in the Eastern Conference right now, have a pretty hefty lead over the Milwaukee Bucks, who we're also going to talk about a little bit later in the show, because, woo, what a return for Giannis in that game. But in the calendar year of 2026, Steve, the Hornets haven't been the middling team that their overall record would exemplify. They haven't been a good team. You could argue they haven't even just been a great team. They have been phenomenal on both ends of the floor, Steve. They are 19-9 in 2026. They have the best net rating, not in the division, not in the Eastern Conference, in the NBA overall, with a nearly 30-game sample to talk about. Per Clean in the Glass, they're first in offense, they're fifth in defense, they're first in net rating. They're currently riding a 4-game winning streak. And in those 4 games, it's a 133.1 offensive rating and a 106.9 defensive rating, which is completely absurd for them. And so, like, I've just been trying to, one, soak in what the Hornets have been doing, because they have just been playing well. They've been getting a bunch of wins. You go back to early January, where they have 2 separate games against the Utah Jazz and the Philadelphia 76ers, where they hold a 50-point lead. It's the first time in franchise history they are able to do that twice, not only in the same season, but in the same month. So, like, that's absurd in and of itself. But even as you're kind of tracking the Hornets on this run, early in January. It's like, okay, they've been playing better. The defense seems more sound. We're going to get into specifics a little bit later. Defense playing more sound. You get to see more of LaMelo plus Con Kniffel plus Brandon Miller together. And it's like, okay, that offense is electric. This is cool. But like the Utah game kind of skews the numbers. Then the Sixers game kind of skews the numbers. But now as we record, Steve, again, 19-9, 13 of their 19 wins have been by double digits. Like, you don't trip into that kind of, not just winning, but that kind of dominance while winning. And then even when you get into their losses, if you remember, beginning of the month, it was basically like three straight clutch losses for them, three straight game winning losses to them. They lose by one to Milwaukee in a game where they pretty much don't have their center rotation. No Musa Diabate, no Ryan Kalkbrenner. They did just sign PJ Hall to kind of fill in some front court minutes. Giannis has 30, 10, and 5 in that game, and he ends up getting the game winner off of a lob from KPJ. Then you get the back-to-back losses to Toronto, where Emmanuel quickly knocks down his three at the buzzer. The next day, they have a lead against the Indiana Pacers. They blow it with some late-game nonsense. LaMelo gets funny in transition, etc. You end up getting the Pascal Siakam layup, and then they turn the ball over directly after giving up that basket. And so, like, those are three of your losses. The only double-digit loss that they have suffered in the year of 2026 was to the Golden State Warriors. And that's, I think, January 17th. So, like, this has just firmly been, we are beating you and beating you soundly. If we do lose to you, it's likely going down to the wire in some capacity. And so I'm just, on a baseline level, I am impressed with the Hornets having this prolonged stretch of play, considering where they've been the last 2, 3, 4, 6, 7, 10 years. And so for them to kind of, even among just the general NBA community, go from LOL Hornets to, hey, they got the best net rating in basketball, and they've had that for like 2.5 months. I just love that portion of the program. Like, this has just been a great story. Before getting into more particulars of how they've been this good, I'm just glad that the area is energized the way that it is and that they're playing this level of basketball.
Well, I mean, I think this is one of those things when it comes to basketball where things are not always going to be linear. You know, no one kind of saw Charlotte having that 9-game win streak and then maintaining the belief on what they found during that win streak. And I think a lot of things have come together. You know, the mindset and the coaching philosophy of Coach Lee has kind of just infiltrated the team, and everyone's kind of bought in. And now that you have a little bit more success, you see them having that belief every single night when they play. Brandon Miller, I think, has been outstanding during the stretch for the most part. So his growth has been great. But you got to remember, Con Kniffel added a whole different layer to this early on in the season. And his consistency was really key for them as far as not only being able to shoot the ball, but we can use him as a screener. He can kind of attack and make plays. We can use him off ball. So you have that layer in Brandon Miller now understanding. And now LaMelo Ball, I don't think he gets enough credit. You know, everyone had a whole bunch of discussion about LaMelo Ball early in the season, about where he should go, what he is, what he's not. And you look at the minute count, it's lower than usual because they're trying to preserve him. But at the same time, he's consistently kind of just making the right plays, making the right reads. And this is a team in Charlotte that competes on the defensive end. Are they a perfect defensive team? No. Is it all schematic? No. But they're going to give the effort every single night. And when they get stops, they get out and run. It makes it easier for them. In the half court, they're able to kind of just have a better flow, which I think has been key because we have, okay, it's not just LaMelo Ball pick and roll or LaMelo Ball dribble handoffs, make a play. Con Kniffel is involved in so many different actions. Brandon Miller is involved in so many different actions. If our first action doesn't work, we can flow to one of those other people. And so I think that's just been a key part for Charlotte, especially in that starting lineup, which I feel like that starting lineup has been a really key part of their success. Like, if you have Diabate, Miller, you have Con Kniffel, LaMelo Ball playing at such a high level, everything kind of just makes more sense. And now the bench can feel the energy. Everyone can play different, you know, and Charlotte's traditionally been a hotbed in the NBA. You go back and look at the 90s tape and listen to how loud that Coliseum was. This is it's nice to see the energy back for the Hornets. And it's nice to see the occasions when, hey, we might mix in some zone for Charlotte. We might mix in some man. We might attack on the other end. But it's been fun to watch the Hornets grow.
It's been very cool. I want to hang on the LaMelo bit for a minute because one of the things I wanted to bring up was, like, it's not like the Hornets have just been the feel-good story. Like, they have dealt with some roster adversity this year. Like, they've dealt with their own injuries. Again, even going back to that Milwaukee game, they just didn't have their front court. just as a quick example there. But like, they've dealt with injuries. LaMelo was dealing with injury stuff again earlier this year. And there's been naturally a lot of conversation around, okay, when he does come back, what does this look like? He was coming off the bench for a little bit. He was starting. Then he moved back to the bench while he was still on the minutes restriction. It's like, okay, why are we doing this with LaMelo? Clearly, you just don't believe in him. Just trade him already. Circles and all that conversation. You zoom out now, Steve. One, LaMelo is just playing incredibly well. It's 19-5-7 for him with solid shooting, with solid shooting splits, at least outside the arc, get to the line a little bit more as he's gotten healthier this year. But like, he's played 51 games as a recording. This is the first time he's eclipsed 50 games since his second year in the league. Like, I think you take that if you are the Charlotte Hornets while understanding we have a plan to ramp this up. It's not always going to be, you know, he's going to play 25 minutes a night. And I think around that time where they're trying to figure out the minutes restriction, there were some games where he wasn't closing because of what the minutes restriction was. It was like, okay, well, cool. Let's adjust this. Let's now move him. Let's have him come off the bench. So now we can match these minutes better. So he can close things out for us. So like, for them to figure that out, deal with that, it wasn't always perfect, but that shows a level of problem solving that we generally haven't seen with the Charlotte Hornets over the last decade or so, or at the very least we haven't seen that consistently. So I'm glad you brought that part up, and LaMelo has been massively important. The numbers are there, the playmaking is there, you continue to keep eyes on the drives, and then you look at the on-offs and the Hornets offense is like 14 points worse with him off the floor, and they score at best offense in NBA history levels with him on the floor. And again, you zoom out, it's Brandon Miller who's become more dynamic as a guy that can attack switches, can get downhill a little bit more, has the mid-range scoring in the bag, doesn't mind bombing away from three. Like, his random second or third quarter explosions have been a fun thing to watch over the last couple of months. Obviously, we've talked quite a bit about Konka Nipple, mostly within, you know, his relation to the Rookie of the Year race between him and Cooper Flagg. But even within just the Charlotte context, the drives, the secondary playmaking, the three-point shooting, his use as a screener for both LaMelo Ball and Brandon Miller on or off the ball, to your point about the Hornets being able to build at their offensive flow, it has just been, one, just incredibly difficult to defend, but again, it's been fun. And as you mentioned, you know, their starting lineup a little bit earlier, the starting five of LaMelo Ball, Brandon Miller, Konka Nipple, Miles Bridges, and Musa Diabate, they have played 281 minutes together. They have won those 281 minutes by 179 points. That is typo-worthy good. That is not supposed to happen, especially with a team as young as it is, or as young as this starting five is overall. And like, having that collective energy offensively, and to your earlier point, being able to defend well enough to make this matter. Like, it is a testament to the personnel buying in. Is a testament to the game planning of Charles Lee, as you mentioned. Like, they will sprinkle in some zone they feel the need to. But a lot of this has been, we're going to switch. We're going to trust our guys to hold up. And then we are going to load the boxes up. We are going to show help. Sometimes it's super early to make sure you can't get to the rim. Sometimes it's going to be flooding you late. So when you have those pickups, you're dealing with a bunch of arms. Either way, like, it's difficult to gain the same rhythm against the Charlotte Hornets defense as you would have earlier in this year or just in years past. And so, do I think the Hornets are like firmly a top five defense like they have been in 2026? Like, that still feels a bit rich to me. I don't think they're that. But the fact that they've gotten to average overall this year and they have showcased against good teams, like, yeah, we can hold up well enough. We do have collective length 1-3, 1-4. We have Ryan Kalkbrenner that can contest a whole bunch of shots at the rim when he's in. With Musa Diabate, we can lean further into the switching. And so you don't have easy advantages to attack. And then we also can just kind of fill these gaps for you to make life difficult. You kind of have to beat us from deep. It is smart game planning for me. And even circling more to the Charles Lee portion of the program, Steve, like, them being able to defend at this level, they don't foul. They clean the glass at a very high level, no pun intended. Like, they have been routinely like a top three defensive rebounding team pretty much all year long. That all points to like solid coaching and a solid understanding of, this is what we have to do. These are our non-negotiables. If we do this, we'll put ourselves in position to win. And the Hornets have won quite a bit. Sorry for getting yappy there, but yeah, it's been fun.
It's okay. I figured you may get there. I think the biggest thing for me is you have to look at just the little things offensively for the Hornets, in the sense that Musa Diabate will always work to flash towards the elbow if things break down in the half court. And I think that's a really important thing. You know, you'll see him kind of just clap his hands, be like, hey, flash, let me get a ball. And we have the random screens for Brandon Miller, for Konkanipal being able to empty out a side. I think Brandon Miller's patience in the half court and his driving ability has been showcased and been a good thing for them. Brandon Miller is a screener. Konkanipal is a screener, both on and off ball. They just kind of ding you and have more of a purpose offensively during this stretch. You know, we've talked about the defense, but I guess the biggest question now is, okay, for the Charlotte Hornets, right, if we look at this stretch, a lot of good wins. How many teams have they really had the test against? If we're looking at who they've beaten lately, Orlando, Washington, Philly by a lot, Memphis, Dallas, San Antonio, New Orleans, Houston, Atlanta, Washington, Chicago, Indiana, Portland. They got Dallas on Tuesday. Then it's at Boston, against Miami, at Phoenix, at Portland, at Sacramento, at San Antonio. I think we learned some things about the Hornets on this West Coast road trip to a degree. So can they now turn the heat up as they have had success is where my mind goes to. I think firmly they've put themselves in the conversation. They've earned that right. And I think they have a style of play that they believe in and consistently do. And you see that, you know, going to the bench. You mentioned Kalkbrenner, but, you know, they added Kobe White. We haven't talked about him yet. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, being able to have Josh Green, who knows the job, Grant Williams knows the job, that kind of gives you an understanding and a consistency night in, night out. How have you felt about White in Charlotte?
Like, it's early, but like, you already kind of see the seeds of, I can be a second side attacker here. I add to the 3-point volume. If I need to initiate action, I can. So like, I've enjoyed that portion. Like, I'm glad you brought up the name of Josh Green and Grant Williams in particular, because like, I think they have been very important ball movers for this group. And honestly, to your overall scheduling point, Steve, I think it is valid to note, like, hey, like, all of these wins have not come against like the top four, top five in the league. Like, this is, you have to play who's on your schedule. So it is encouraging to me to, they beat the teams that they were supposed to, and they have beat a lot of these teams handily. So I think that bodes well. But as you get into this next stretch of games for them, it kind of feeds into the one thing I've been keeping an eye on. As fun as this Charlotte Hornets offense has been, and ultimately how good as it's been this year, and especially within the calendar year 2026, per Clean the Glass, they are dead last to turnover rate. It hasn't dinged them as much because they have been elite on the offensive glass all year long. Shout out Musa Diabate, and also like the wings that can get in and crash. But Musa drives a lot of that. But they've been an elite offensive rebounding team, and they've done a really good job cleaning the glass on the other end. So like, they are still able to win the possession battle overall most nights because of what they're doing on the offensive glass and because of the fact that they don't foul like that on top of that. You get into Miami and Phoenix and Boston, et cetera, they will turn you over and they will turn these and they will turn this into points. And so, like, as they face these more pressurized defenses, are they ready for those particular tests? Can they prove, like, not only can we generate good stuff, we can do so without giving the other team extra possessions on top of that? And, like, trusting what has been a better transition defense than I would have anticipated with a team this young, and especially what they showed earlier this year. But, like, yeah, man, you're going to have to, like, the Boston matchup, I am absolutely circling. Like, one, Boston is just incredibly good. They just blasted Milwaukee without Jaylen Brown, without Nemias Kata. They are just one of the best teams, if not the best team of these, depending on how you feel about it. And they may add Jason Tatum. But with what Boston does.
Hold on. Respect Detroit. We literally just did a whole deep thing.
We just did a whole thing on Detroit. I'm just saying, like, I think they have the best point differential in the East Conference right now. I'm saying you can make the argument for Boston. That's more so what I mean. I'm not just stamping them over Detroit overall.
Okay.
That's all I meant. Understood. Clock that T. I feel. I'm just saying you can make the argument, or at least like who's playing better right now. But anyway, my overarching point is that like stylistically, that is a fun matchup. Like Boston has also been an elite offensive rebounding team. They're gonna test the elite defensive rebounding of Charlotte. Like that can be an important swing battle there. Boston doesn't turn the ball over either, and Charlotte, you know, structurally, we're going to switch a bunch. We're going to load up health, et cetera. They haven't been a super aggressive, we are blitzing you, we are forcing a bunch of turnovers and juicing our transition attack that way. Does that flip at all? Do they decide to put two on the ball against anyone in that matchup? So, like, I just have my eyes on that one. That should be a really fun battle. Also, this is the Charles Lee revenge game. He was on Boston staff. So, that should be a fun one. But, yeah, I've been super impressed with what the Hornets have put together.
I just don't know if that's revenge. He left to coach his team. Kind of, I took an opportunity. Thank you for everything. Would like to beat you, but I don't think it's revenge. I mean, I think one of these things, when you have teams that get hot late in the year, right, it's a positive for them. But now, what does the league do to respond? Is it switching? Mm-hmm. Is it sagging off? Is it going under? You know, because a lot of, you know, is it trying to get mess up your flow, be physical, take away your movement? Who's going to poke at them and kind of bring them back into the box? And the other portion of it is, you know, let's say they are able to make the playoffs. They play Detroit in the first round, right? Detroit's, well, actually, now this landed in my brain. That might need to happen based on the last time we saw these two teams play. I forgot about that for two seconds. But... Okay, who's going to be physical with them? Like, what is the solve? Like, that's where it gets pretty interesting for me. And so I'm with you. Mm-hmm. I wanted to indulge in the Hornets.
I think that's fair, Steve. I think this is going to be an interesting stretch for Charlotte. Quickly, since we are fresh off of having a Paolo Banchero conversation on Friday, I actually want to ask you about the Orlando Magic just as a whole. So this was more like, again, the Friday conversation was more Paolo-centric. Orlando's seventh in the Eastern Conference right now. They're not too far out of sixth, but it has been a weird stretch for them. They are now on the losing streak. We are not too far coming off of, hey, Paolo, you're asking about what's going on in the second halves. You say one thing, you ask Jamal Mosley the next day about it, and it's like, well, I think Detroit just played harder. And it's like, ah, well, probably not a big deal in a vacuum, but then the overall conversation of how this team has been taught, you know, that feels kind of weird. So, Steve, I just ask you broadly, where are you at with the Orlando Magic right now? Like, is this a team that could turn it around? Are they just kind of middling and we just need to get to some changes in the offseason? Like, what end of the spectrum do you find yourself on with this group?
I mean, I think Orlando has always been a dark horse type candidate if they could put themselves in the right position. And for me, part of that is just getting into the playoff mix. And they're right there. Them and Philly, they could knock on the door. I think for me with Orlando, the issue is the defense can't be what it is. Well, I think they're like 15th in defensive rating in the calendar year of 2026, according to NBA.com. That's not part of the formula. It's not horrible, but they have to kind of be an elite defense. If you're not going to be that same elite defense, your offense can't be 22nd. And so they have not necessarily found what they need to be themselves. I think it's in them. They have size. They have length. They have defensive mindset. They've attempted things offensively. But are they playing with the same belief? Are they playing with the same moxie offensively? Do they? How many guys are playing with confidence right now? How many guys are going right now? And so, yes, I could probably theorize they would not be a fun team to play in the playoffs. But they've got to start playing some quality basketball to put themselves in position to be there and be able to use Paolo Banchero and Franz Wagner if they can get healthy and Desmond Bane get downhill, because we've seen positive things from the Magic. Unfortunately, we have not seen anything that looks like consistency, and you don't know which part is really the solve, right? I think for me, it's always been, okay, when they defend, everything looks a lot better. Especially because you had this year from Anthony Black, Jalen Suggs decided to become Stone Cold. Like, there are things that are positive for Orlando. The issue is, like, you don't know what it's going to be every night, and that's probably something that has to change. You know, they've got to figure out a way to turn this thing around, and they got to do it quick.
Yeah, like, the thing that I settled on with the Orlando Magic as I was getting notes together and like doing my general walk around the apartment, talk to myself, clear my thoughts kind of thing, is like, when I'm watching Magic games, like, I wish I had a stronger sense of what they were attempting to do on offense, regardless of if it works or not, regardless if the shots go down or not. I wish I had a better handle, like, what do you want to get to? Do you understand why you're trying to get to it? And like, this was a possession that I wanted to bring up a couple weeks ago, Steve. It was like the first matchup that they had against the Los Angeles Clippers, where early in that game, you get Paolo and Desmond Bane in action together. It's a pick and roll between the two. Chris Dunn and Derrick Jones Jr. are defending it, right? And so Bane screens for Paolo, and you get a switch. And it's like, okay, so Paolo's just going to try to attack Chris Dunn then, since great defender, but he's smaller. But then it's a pitch back to Desmond Bane. They give the switch right back up, swing to Wendell Carter Jr. He tries to clear. Paolo makes a pass to Tristan Da Silva. They end up getting free throws on the possession. But those kind of possessions where it's like you have your two best players involved. What exactly is your plan? Do you understand what you want and how you want it? Those possessions are one, they just happen too often for me to feel comfortable with this Orlando Magic offense. And I think those ring louder than, ooh, Paolo took an early mid-range jumper and missed, or Jalen Suggs has driven into two or three people. Like, those are loud, and you don't want those possessions either. But, like, the level of indecision, we're just kind of doing stuff because we think we're supposed to, but I don't really know what the ultimate end goal is. And again, that possession ended well. Tristan Silva gets a three block by Kawhi, gets his own rebound, drives and gets to the free throw line. But I think it speaks to your indecision point. I mean, your inconsistency point, where it's just like, what Magic team am I going to see? And I think if that is what it is on offense, well, you don't really know what it's going to be. And defenses are more able to dictate, no, this is the box your offense is going to be in. We're going to switch and you're going to have to figure this out. We're going to put two on Paolo and figure this out. And we're going to get a whole bunch of turnovers for us and things like that. They're not doing enough dictating offensively for me. And like, some of that is personnel, some of that is coaching. Again, Franz not being there certainly does not make this problem easier to deal with. But like, I just find myself often frustrated with some of the aimlessness in their offense. And that's before getting into your overall point, which I super agree with. The defense just can't be average. Like, this was supposed to be an elite defense. Like, the reason I thought the Magic could have been a three seed this year, certainly going to end up wrong on that, was because I'm baking in, this is, even if the defense slips a little bit, they're going to be fifth, sixth, seventh defensively. The offense is going to take a jump. And now we got this really good, two-way team. The fact that the offense is hovering around 20th again, injury context, of course, and the defense is now average. I don't like that. I don't like that. I know Magic fans don't either. They're more invested in this than I am. But like, it can't be that. Like, I just want more direction. I want more oomph for this group.
Understood. 6-7.
Okay. You know what? With that, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to get through the rest of the Southeast play-in picture. And then we're going to talk about Milwaukee because they're in a really interesting spot right now with a little over a month left in this regular season. Please stay tuned. And we are back with this episode of the Dunker Spot. We roll through the play-in still. Steve, I want to talk about the Atlanta Hawks. We just got, not too long, talked about the Charlotte Hornets, currently on a four-game winning streak. But again, they've been elite in 2026. The Atlanta Hawks are also on a four-game winning streak. Now, with that being said, the first thing that people are going to point to is going to be like what the schedule has been for them across these four games. And I think it is fair to point out that in this winning streak,
people are mean. People are mean. Go ahead, continue.
Okay, you know, I was going to point out, they beat Brooklyn. They had to come back and get that one done. They played Washington twice, and then they played Portland. They were missing Denny Avdia. They're also missing Shaedon Sharpe. So put a grain of salt in there if you'd like. I will say, like, beating the teams that you're supposed to beat is still important, and blasting them to the degree that the Hawks have, I think it's also important for them. What has made me laugh about the Hawks before we actually get into a serious conversation with them, they are 31-31 right now. Pretty much a net neutral in terms of net rating right now. And then from this tweet, they are 45-45 over their last 90. I'm not going to read the second one. Steve, you've already ruined that one. 174-174 in their last 340. They've just been different levels of 500 for a very long time. And like, I chuckled at that one as that stat was updated after their most recent win. But I did want to talk about the Atlanta Hawks, that they've recently changed their starting lineup. CJ McCollum is in now. Feels spacier. And again, with, you know, factoring in the quality of opponent that they faced during this win streak, I'm more so looking at, as I generally do, but okay, how exactly are you getting to your good stuff? Is this just insane shot making, or actually, are you actually doing good things that lead to good process? And I will say, throughout this win streak, I have been impressed with the process with the Atlanta Hawks. Like, looking at what they've been able to do offensively, the tempo has felt good, in my opinion. You're seeing a lot of get the ball across at 20 or 19 on the clock, and then we're flowing. It may be Jalen Johnson initiating and kicking it to CJ McCollum. They flow into, you know, he flows to a two-man action with someone. If there's an advantage there, cool. If not, we float to the second side. Same thing. Off-ball screens to set up a catch, then that flows into a pick and roll. Like, they've done a really good job of making sure that everyone is involved. And so it makes it harder to kind of lean on one person. Like, you can't just say, we are taking the ball out of Jalen Johnson's hands. Let's see what you do about it. Because they generally have three or four other guys capable on the floor of putting the ball on the floor and making drives, making decisions off of the drives, being able to keep things going with passing, and then you have the shot making the match. And so, like, looking back at the Portland game, like, one of the possessions that stood out to me as I was watching that game, it was very early on. Bring the ball up left side of the floor, Onyeka Kongu is trailing, and then he gets to make decisions. Like, am I shooting? Am I driving? I don't know. If it's not there, cool. Let's get to the second side of this then. You deny it, that's okay. We'll get into something else. And, like, that level of flow from the Atlanta Hawks is what I want to see from that offense. Like, it's very egalitarian, you know, in concept. But, like, that's what it can look like for them. Which, brief aside, as I think about just overall what this five-man group has been with CJ McCollum, Dyson Daniels, Nikhil Alexander-Walker, Jalen Johnson, Onyeka Okongwu, that lineup has been very good so far. We'll start with that. They're plus 60 in 120 minutes. I think you take that if you're the Atlanta Hawks. Looking at the assist split between those five, Steve, 19 assists for Dyson Daniels, 18 for Jalen Johnson, 15 for CJ McCollum, 11 for Nikhil Alexander-Walker, and 9 for Onyeka Okongwu. And everyone has assisted on multiple threes and shots at the rim. Like, I think that all just kind of speaks to, we all can touch this, we all can make decisions, we all can generate good stuff and or maintain advantages for good stuff to be created. And I love that part of the process for them. The defense is always going to be what I keep an eye on. But go ahead.
Hold on. Okay. Easy there. All right. I'm afraid I've got some bad news because This is not new. Atlanta has been able to score. They've been able to move the ball. They've gone side to side. They have multiple bucket getters. I think Jonathan Kuminga's addition has been fantastic. I was going to ask about that. The offensive portion of the program is not new to me. You know, we have Corey Kispert, who's apparently losing his mind making threes. Like, we do different things with space support. We attack. The offense, I've not been concerned with the Atlanta Hawks playing offense. What I've been concerned with, and the whole thing for me, when are they going to defend? When they defend, they look very good. Unfortunately, do you know when they are going to defend, and do you know how long they're going to defend for? During this stretch, right, held Brooklyn to 104, Washington under 100 twice, Portland 101. And they have a nice homestand coming up of Philadelphia, Dallas, Brooklyn, Milwaukee, Orlando. Can they establish some sort of baseline defensively to make everything they've done all year long offensively count? That's the Atlanta Hawks question. That's the Atlanta Hawks story. And so, yeah, CJ McCollum adds a ball handler. Nikhil Alexander-Walker's been great. Jalen Johnson can't hone in on them. Can they do enough defensively to make the offense pop even more?
I think that's fair. And I think ultimately this is kind of why I want to start with the offense. You zoom out for what they've been in 2026 so far, 15-12. They're seventh in defense in the calendar year of 2026. They're 21st in offense. Now, there's a lot of injury stuff. You also factor in the trades and what they did to the rotations. A lot of context to add to why it's been that. But, like, at their best, to your point, yeah, we have been able to get up and down the floor. We're really good in transition. This is why we need the defense to be good so we can get out in transition. But, like, we have seen some games where, like, okay, we're going to be physical. We're going to switch. We're going to bog you down. Let's see what Jalen Johnson does in the middle of the floor compared to him getting all the way to the rim. One thing I want to shout out when I was talking about that starting lineup in particular, it's funny that they have been this good offensively with their five-man grouping, despite the fact that Jalen Johnson is 1 of 15 from 3 in the minutes that he's played with these four so far. Like, that is not going to hold. So it is interesting to me. Like, I think it's important for them to maintain that flow because I don't think they have a guy yet. I think Jalen Johnson can develop into this. And I think Jonathan Kuminga, especially facing second units, can be a guy that can just say, give me the ball, get out the way. I'm getting downhill. Let's see what you do about it, right? But they're at their best when they are flowing to this degree and everyone's kind of moving around. And so the fact that they have been able to kind of recapture this as of late has been encouraging to me. And to your point, as we get into this stretch of games now, one road game and then we had the homestand, let's maintain this against some teams that are either good defensively or at least have the personnel that could kind of bother us stylistically. Looking at Orlando more on that point, we are big, we are physical, we can switch a bunch, we can potentially flatten you out. So, like, I want to see, to your point, again, how they sustain that. But I like that this is perking up for them. They need this to perk up for them. How have you, I guess I'll quickly answer your Jonathan Kuminga question and then toss it back to you. I'm just trying not to get fooled again, ultimately, because this is very reminiscent of, like, the first couple of weeks of Golden State this year, where it's the Kuminga drives are hitting, he's knocking down shots, he's moving the ball, the defensive attentiveness is better, it's not perfect, but it's better, and he's just kind of fitting in and then bullying people when he has mismatches. It's like, okay, if he's going to play within the flow and make quick decisions, I really like this version of Jonathan Kuminga. And I think that is largely what we have gotten. And to your very early point, not against the best defensive personnel across these first, you know, across these three games that he's played in Atlanta, but process wise, this is what you want from Jonathan Kuminga. So my big thing again is going to be, will this sustain for Jonathan Kuminga? Because if it does, that is a lot of firepower on that second unit and a guy that could potentially close games if any one of the wings don't have it going. So I just want to see more of it. How have you felt about the Kuminga stretch so far?
What do you mean by getting fooled? You know who Jonathan Kuminga is as a basketball player. He's in a completely different context that suits him a little bit more. We play, get up and down the court. We play with tempo. You have the ability to drive. You have the ability to kick. You have the ability to attack and transition. You have the ability to get downhill. Here are the keys. We're not setting post splits and looking for specific things every single time. We have some movement, but go play. And I think this is the biggest thing is don't worry about being fooled. Fit, opportunity, and context are some of the most important things for a basketball player. You can have a certain skill set, and it may not fit a certain team because they need something different, or they're going to ask you to do something different on top of the player that you are. You may go somewhere else where they are just like, hey, just be that, and everything else is icing on the cake. That's why you see Benedict Mathurin. Ty Lue said, Benedict Mathurin, go drive. Go make a play. And it's like, cool, yeah, I can do that. It's not like he couldn't do that in Indiana, but it was like, hey, we need you to do this here. And he's like, okay, fine, I'll do that as well. I wouldn't necessarily wait for the other shoe to drop. I would just see, how does he develop? How do teams treat him? What does he continue to do? Because this is the opportunity he's waited for. And so, you know, this is how we end up with Phoenix Suns fans yelling at Jalen Green for some reason. Hey, he's not supposed to be by himself. He's not supposed to be by himself, guys. That wasn't the bit. Like, that's not how that works. So, like, you just have to understand the player, understand the moment, understand what they bring to the table, in my opinion.
No, I think that's fair. And, like, to that point, I think he has fit very nicely so far in Atlanta. So again, I guess I should word it differently, not necessarily like I don't want to be fooled, but it's more so like I want to see him sustain this level of play. Because I think, to your point, we talked about this when the trade was made. This is a context in terms of the play style and the overall tempo that Atlanta wants to play at. This does make more sense for him. This is a better stylistic fit for who Jonathan Kuminga is right now. And so I think there is a better chance for him to sustain this, but I do want to see him sustain it. Is kind of my big picture thought right now when it comes to Kuminga. I want to toss one thing at you on this, well, two things at you on this Hawks group before we move to Miami. One, the Dyson Daniels season has been very interesting to me, more so offensively than anything. Because I think one of the quiet things is like him being able to initiate as much as he has been, him being used as a screener and handoff hub as much as he has been. It's kind of mitigating what has been like a very bad three-point shooting season in terms of efficiency and also volume. So I'm glad that he has found other ways to impact things offensively, and the offensive rebounding has been incredibly fun for him. As we talk about what is Atlanta going to look like as the competition stiffens and things, will teams experiment more with putting bigs on Dyson Daniels? Like, it's not something that he's never seen before, but in light of how he's been used this year, like, is that as effective as a strategy as it has been in years past? I'm curious to see what that part is. And Onyeka Okongwu just becoming a volume three-point shooting big on top of everything else is just incredibly cool and a very fun development for Atlanta. It started with the random exit screens for corner threes a year and so ago, and now he's just bombed. He's just taking five threes a game and shooting 37-38% of them. So, like, I just wanted to shout out Onyeka for what he has been for that center room. So that is just two quick ones from me. Let's talk about the Milwaukee Bucks real quick, Steve. They are the team that is outside of the play-in picture right now. Again, I think 3.5 games behind the Charlotte Hornets, who are streaking right now. Outside the play-in picture, Giannis just made his return. Second night of the back-to-back for Milwaukee. They had a home game, a road game, then a home game. They get Boston. They get blasted by Boston. So not the most fun game to watch, Drew. Not the most fun result for Bucks fans in particular, but I give a little bit of grace with Boston being incredibly good and also second night of a back-to-back. But this is a team that is looking to make a play-in push. And we have seen on the high end in 2026 at the very least, and I tweeted this recently, the Bucks were at one point were the best half-court offense in basketball, or at the very least were producing the most efficient half-court offense in basketball. Guards were knocking down a whole bunch of shots. The five-out spacing, I think, was helping induce driving lanes. They're one of the highest volume pick-and-roll teams in the league. So if you get any amount of pull-up shooting or advantage creation from there, it's kind of easy to eke out those kind of advantages with the way that Milwaukee spaces the floor. On the other side of the coin, though, this defense has largely been a mess this year, and like not having Giannis until yesterday certainly does not help in that regard. But they have been so inconsistent in terms of what we're doing. Are we switching a bunch? Are we getting at the level with Miles Turner? When we have Jericho Sims in, are we still switching? What are we doing with Bobby Portis, etc.? And when they do get into anything activity-based, the rotations behind it have been, we will say, inconsistent to be kind and in the interest of time. And so what I'll pose to you, Steve, is do you see Milwaukee making a run to firmly get into the top 10, or do you think they're ultimately going to find themselves out of this?
I mean, with the way that the Hawks and the Hornets are playing, it's going to be tough. It's an uphill climb. You put yourself in a tough hole, and you're in a position where now you have to win. And have you had the habits to necessarily feel good about where you're going on this journey? Like, Giannis Antetokounmpo is back. He's going to draw attention. He's going to play well. That's fantastic. Defensively, do you feel good enough at what you've been doing? It's been a question mark all year long when Giannis was there at the beginning, when Giannis was gone. Offensively, who's creating other shots? How important is the guard play? You know, it's fun to see Usman Dieng play well. They feel like they have different combinations they can go to, but defensively, do you trust their ability to sustain on that end? And then offensively, okay, outside of Giannis, if teams want to help, are we knocking down enough shots? Do we have enough lineup combinations that put pressure on teams? When we go to the bench, does it open things up? Can they find themselves, I think, is the big key. With Giannis back in, because they had a good offensive rhythm early in the season as far as being able to use Giannis and move him across the board, have him be a screener, have him use dribble handoffs. You never knew exactly what he was going to do, and it was good. They spaced around him. They had a good flow. Defensively, they didn't have the same consistency they needed. But can you now refine the offensive flow on top of trying to play defense? And now, are the guards going to defer to Giannis? Are you going to be able to have the same kind of spacing? It gets interesting, I think. And so I'm not sure that they are going to have enough to make it happen. But, I mean, they play the Hawks coming up on Wednesday. So, I mean, you got to make a push with these four home games you have and see if you can kind of knock on the door.
Yeah, like I think that's the encouraging part from an opportunity standpoint for the Milwaukee Bucks. The next five, as you mentioned, they're playing the Hawks on Wednesday at home. It's Utah at home. It's Orlando, also in this play-in picture, at home. And then it's Phoenix next Tuesday. That caps off the homestand. And then it's at Miami next Thursday. So, like, three of your five are against teams that are ahead of you in directly in the play-in picture. So, like, if you go 3-0 in those games, you naturally put yourself in a better position to make a run. I think for me, like, I'm curious also to see what this implementation offensively is going to look like. I think naturally it's Giannis. There is going to be a level of deference. I was encouraged by the fact that it did feel like there was a lot of screen setting and handoff usage for Giannis in the game back. Like, I can quickly get those actual numbers, but at least felt that way early on before the game got out of hand. And then the Bucks made their run early in the third quarter, and then it got out of hand again. So, like, that's encouraging to me that, like, there is a blend that could be found between Giannis attacks early in transition. But when we get into the half court, we can use these guards a little bit more. I think for me, it's like finding a level of rotation consistency, because Giannis comes back, Usman Dieng gets the start, which he's been playing well since he's been there, so I don't super mind that. But it's KPJ and AJ Green, who Bucks fans have been, they're very wide opinions on the AJ Green experience. Like, on one hand, it's, well, yeah, he's our best shooter. He helps the offense. The on-off numbers are this, et cetera. On the other hand, it's like, yeah, what else does he do aside from shoot? This defense is this. When he is matched up against bigger players, it is not a fun time, and our defense is already bad. And so it's interesting to me to see Ryan Rollins be the guy that goes back to the bench and did not play well. But again, second night of a back-to-back. Also, the regular season is long, so sometimes players just don't have good games. So I'm curious to see, like, what the guard/wing rotation is going to look like for Milwaukee. And then to the front court. And I was talking to you about this before the show, Steve. This Miles Turner season and this Miles Turner usage and the Miles Turner minutes have all just kind of felt weird, regardless of how healthy they've been otherwise. And I just don't know how I feel about the Miles Turner experience right now. And it doesn't feel like the coaching staff knows how to feel about the Miles Turner experience. It's like his minutes and role kind of fluctuates. Jericho Sims wasn't playing, and now he's just a part of the rotation, which I don't mind. I think the vertical rim pressure he provides, the offensive rebounding, the switchability, like, you can see the logic behind playing him more, and he has given them good stuff. The Bobby Portis season, he's knocking down threes, but also he can be catching holdy, and then the defense is what it is. Like, the front court rotation's also kind of odd. So, like, do we get to a point to where we see more Giannis at the five kind of by default because we have all these guards that we can play? and there's differing levels of trust in the front court? Like, is that something you could foresee moving forward?
Well, I mean, you have all these bigs that you have to play because they're on your roster. So, you can get to Giannis at the five, but I don't know if it's going to be an advantage. I don't know if it's going to be a threat, and you still have to play those other guys. You know what I mean? Bobby Porter's still going to play 20 minutes, and if Jericho Sims' energy is going to earn him 20 minutes, it's going to be fantastic. I mean, I think for Miles Turner, it's been, okay, what exactly do they want him to do? You know, is he going to be a switch big? Do you feel good about the switches? How much is he going to be spaced in the half court? Is it going to have an aspect? You know, I thought his random cuts were very good early for Milwaukee. Does that matter as much anymore? Is he just spaced? Is he not involved as a screener? Does he have a feel on either end of the floor? I haven't necessarily felt that. You know what Bobby Portis is, but is this going to be Bobby Portis shoots threes? Or is this going to be Bobby Portis trying to attack in the post? I don't know if you necessarily are going to get to, hey, we're just going to exclusively play small ball, because you have the yin yang of, I don't know which bigs I trust and I don't know which guards I trust. As far as, you know, Cam Thomas plays 11 minutes, Ryan Rollins plays 24 minutes, Gary Harris, we need this. Like, it gets interesting. So they just have to find the people that they believe in, and they got to do it quick.
They got to do it quick indeed. 34 in the second game for Cam Thomas. He has 37 combined over his last five. Like, that is not going to get it done. Also, keeping an eye on just the rebounding. A lot of that is tied to, again, the rotations from Milwaukee defensively just kind of being haphazard. They've technically been, like, slightly above average as a defense rebounding team, but, like, Boston hit them hard last night. Second night of the back-to-back tax, if you want to add that in. But they can't afford to backslide when they do get stops.
Well, I think the one thing with Boston is they play a very specific style of basketball. And so if you are driving, they're going to show help. And especially, like, they were like, oh, your biggest space, the help will come from the big. There will be presence in the paint. You got to make plays and make threes. And then we're just going to attack on the other end once we get stops. And so Boston, again, they do certain things every single night. Milwaukee's got to find a way to compete at a higher level if they want to have a chance this season.
Got to get there. They got to get there. All right. Thank you, Steve, as always, for rocking with me and rocking with us. And thank you for listening to and or watching this episode of The Dunker Spot. Please subscribe if you haven't already. Apple, Spotify, RIP Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcasts, you can find us. Subscribe to the Yahoo NBA YouTube channel if you haven't already. You can find me on socials at Nikias NBA. You can follow Steve on socials at Steve Jones 20. And with that, we will catch y'all later in the week.